540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. Massive winter storm is expected to bring blizzard conditions to the Rockies, Northern Plains, and Midwest. Forecaster David Roth at the National Weather
Service. Northeast Colorado through western Nebraska, eastern Wyoming, western South Dakota, and far southeast Montana.
For those farther south, heavy rains with possible flash flooding, hail, and tornadoes. Roth says it's all moving east, and low pressure will likely bring snow to the Mid-Atlantic region, too.
Several inches of snow across, like, western Maryland, the West Virginia Panhandle through portions of Pennsylvania, and what anybody would consider upstate New York, northern New York.
The House Financial Services Committee plans to hold a hearing Tuesday into the collapse of crypto exchange FTX, but now it looks like it may be missing its star witness. Former FTX CEO Sam Bankman-Fried has been arrested in the Bahamas at the request of the U.S. government. And Elon Musk's Twitter has dissolved its Trust and Safety Council, the advisory group formed to address hate speech, child exploitation, suicide, self-harm, and other problems on the platform. That word from several council members who spoke to the AP on condition of anonymity due to fears of retaliation. A former Libyan intelligence official accused of making the bomb that brought down Pan Am Flight 103 appeared in federal court in Washington on terrorism charges. 11 people on the ground and 259 on the plane were killed when it exploded over Lockerbie, Scotland in 1988. Our Eric Tucker was in the court.
We heard Mr. Massoud indicate that he did not want to say anything until he had an attorney. He was, of course, represented by attorneys, but those federal defenders said that Mr. Massoud wanted his own attorneys, which the Constitution permits.
And in another D.C. court, trial started for four members of the Oath Keepers extremist group on seditious conspiracy charges in connection with the Capitol riot. This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I'm 54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference. At aceyourretirement.org, in just 3 minutes, you'll get a free personalized retirement plan. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. State and federal authorities have joined the investigation into the shooting death of a Milwaukee mail carrier. Authorities say the victim was shot and killed Friday night while delivering mail. The U.S. Postal Service is offering a $50,000 reward for information. Authorities last we knew were looking for a silver Audi SUV with tinted windows and that the suspect should be considered armed and dangerous. Wisconsin wildlife officials are looking for information in the shooting deaths of two breeding-age female elk near Black River Falls during the 9-day gun deer season. The Department of Natural Resources is trying to grow the elk herd in Wisconsin. Wisconsin Health Services Secretary Karen Timberlake says she'll resign on January 2nd. Timberlake led Wisconsin through crises like the COVID-19 pandemic and a statewide hospital worker shortage. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Just a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm still stuck on this Tim Scott thread over on Twitter. You know, despite many American families struggling, generosity still defines us, Tim Scott wrote. Americans give 7 times as much as Europeans and 2 times as much as Canadians per capita. He also points out that the philanthropy roundtable, which I did not know until this moment that there is a philanthropy roundtable, but he says they credit our unique history and character, including strong social consciousness and spiritual faith. That's what makes us so generous. Not the fact that we have such great need and that there are people who are literally trying to get health care off of GoFundMe accounts. Never mind that. Bake sales for arms, handing over, you know, our education system to a couple of bucks for corporate America to advertise to our children for. No, never mind. But we're just charitable. That's because we're so charitable. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the philanthropy argument. And should we trust the wealthy? Should we trust philanthropy as a whole? Or should we, as a matter of course, use government to do collectively the things that we cannot do individually? That's why I've asked my good friend Morris Pearl to come share some thoughts. Morris is the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, great to talk to you, Rick.
So we are the most charitable country in the world, Morris, according to Senator Scott.
Well, I suppose, depending on how you define charity, a huge amount of that, though, Rick, is people taking funds and just transferring it to things like personal private trusts, donor-advised funds, things that are essentially hedge funds that make lots of money for the managers, but just kind of sit there forever and accumulate and accumulate and accumulate. And yes, maybe after the funder dies, someday they'll be used for actual charitable purposes, but that's a long time in the future. And part of the reason why Americans are more generous than people in other countries is because most people in these other countries they're talking about don't need GoFundMe accounts for their medical expenses because they have medicine paid for by their government collectively. They don't need some of the things that we do privately because they do them collectively, and that's how they should be done. So the idea that we're more charitable than others, it's only because the party on the other side has decided to starve the government of resources and prevent the government from doing the basic things that governments are supposed to do, and then shifted that burden to private individuals who do some of it. That's true. But that's just kind of ridiculous. And furthermore, they define charity pretty broadly,
yep,
like building a concert hall with your name on it. You know, putting the name of your company on the wing of a museum to impress people, that's charity. Does that help anybody other than the people whose name is on the wing? Maybe, maybe not. But that's a lot of what charity is, unfortunately, is people putting up some big monolithic thing in order to like impress themselves or their friends or whomever. So no, we still need government doing things collectively. There are things we can't do individually, and they have to be done collectively. And we have a word for that, and the word is government.
No. The word socialism. Socialism.
And there are things we do socially, like Social Security. That's, most people think that's a good thing, we have Social Security. Maybe some people think it's a bad thing. I personally don't. We need to do things collectively together, and we need to make decisions democratically.
Yep.
I don't want to live in a country where the few rich people decide how society's resources should be deployed because they have all the resources. I want to live in a country where voters, through their elected representatives, make these decisions, not the few rich people. You know, as I said, it's easy to raise money for like a new concert hall or something, but we also need money for schools and poor people's neighborhoods. We also need money for sewage treatment centers and things like that. Things that people, you know, aren't so crazy about having their names on.
Yeah.
We need to make
decisions democratic. How come we've never found a billionaire to put their name on a sewage treatment plant?
Well, we have, because we've got collected some of their money through tax payments, and then we build the sewage treatment centers, you know, and say that the taxpayers have paid for this. So kind of we have.
But no, I want their name plastered across the sign like we do at stadiums and stuff. How come we never see that?
Yeah. Well, maybe we should, Rick. I think we could.
You know, this, never mind. I'm not going there. The FCC will yeah, crush me. But here's the thing. And this is where, you know, this idea of philanthropy and, you know, being charitable, you know, my problem with it is we waste so much resource in being charitable that it doesn't actually filter down to help people. I mean, you know, we see this every so often where somebody will look at one of these charities and find, you know, like 50, 60 cents of every dollar that's actually donated is just spent on raising more money. I think there's got to be a more efficient way. If the goal truly, if the goal is helping people, making better lives, there's got to be a more efficient system.
There has to be. I was looking at the financial statements of the Ford Foundation one day. The top people who are getting paid are all hedge fund managers who work for the Ford Foundation. The program officers are way down the list, the people in charge of actually giving out money. Essentially, it's a hedge fund operation that kind of has a charity on the side. And too much of America is becoming like that. These vast accumulations of wealth, whether it's a university or hospital or a foundation or something, that's basically a financial company that runs a small charity operation on the side. And that's what too much of America is now. And yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't help.
Now, you guys pointed out two billionaires this week in one of your weekly communications that I found very interesting. You talked about Jeff Bezos and the layoffs at Amazon, and you talked about Warren Buffett and what's going on at the railroad. And you go, you know, at some point, you know, I don't know, this billionaire philanthropy doesn't seem all that it's cracked up to, because it's not helping the workers.
I mean, philanthropy is fine. I'm not against philanthropy. I'm just also for having rules that we enforce about how people are treated. For instance, I think we just passed a law in New York about this just this week, that people should know when their days off are a day ahead of time, so they can like make a doctor's appointment or something, instead of being on call every single day. A lot of people, that doesn't work, because they have to do other things in other parts of their life.
Oh, I know.
They can't be on call for their job every single day.
And oh, no.
We should have rules about that.
No,
I just expect generous people to do things on their own.
See, I know all about that. I was on call for 11 years. I know how difficult it is, which is why I'm on the side of these workers trying to make sure that they have the opportunity to get some time off. The difference was, is I was able to have sick days. The difference was I was able to book off and take time off when I needed to go to the doctors. The way they've rigged this game against these workers just tells me that they're trying to make those jobs so unbearable that eventually nobody takes them, and they can cry, oh, hey, we need to automate them.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's more like they don't care about the workers. I think they want to figure out mathematically what is the fewest number of workers they can have.
Yeah.
Because they're competing with other companies. And if one company is running with fewer workers and the other one is less profitable, well, that looks bad. And I think they're just trying to figure out what is the exact lowest possible number of workers they can have and still survive. And that makes a miserable workplace when you're running with the lowest amount of resources that you can survive with, because sometimes people really are sick and things go wrong.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of successful organizations have more workers than they need most of the time, because of those occasional times when people aren't available and they actually need them. So, yeah, I mean, you have to run with a little bit extra most of the time in order to cover those times. That's why before deregulation, the phone companies practically never failed to connect your calls because they had excess capacity. It's a lot of things. Regulation and government regulations help in order to make things more reliable and better for people.
You're absolutely right. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Morris Pearl. Morris is the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website, if you want to take a look at their work. Now, I've been a long proponent of stopping the tax deductions on this. They tell me, maybe you can clear this up, but they tell me that tax deductions aren't the reason that people give to charity. And if that's truly the case, if that's not your reasoning, even though, according to this report, December 30th and 31st are the most important days in the charitable calendar, then the tax deduction shouldn't matter to you. You should be giving charity and help because you want to, out of the goodness of your heart or whatever your motivation is, but not because of a tax break. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, it's got to be part. I mean, I don't know, but I'm sure that tax deductions are part of the reason, but not all the reason. If you were strictly thinking about dollars and cents and money, you would keep the money and not give it away at all. You're never actually financially ahead because you give money to charity, you know, unless you happen to work for the charity as a job or something like that. But I think it makes a big difference in inducing people to give money for charity. Believe me, we have some things that are tax deductible and some things that are not that I raise money for. It's easy to raise money for tax deductible things, I'll tell you. So I think that's part of it, but not all of it, in my personal opinion.
No, I'm sure it is. But at the end of the day, I'm a firm believer. When I give something to somebody, it's not because I want something in return. And I think as a government, we should be moving in that direction. Same things with religious contributions. You give to your church, we shouldn't be paying for that through the tax code. We should be using the scarce resources we have to make people's lives better. That's just my thought.
Well, essentially, if I make a donation to charity, if I'm in the 20% tax bracket, that only costs me 80 cents per the dollar, because essentially the government, the other taxpayers, are putting in the other 20 cents. And sometimes it's 30 or 40 cents. So essentially, it's a government subsidy of whatever it is the rich people happen to be doing.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I don't think the government should be subsidizing rich people deciding to do whatever it is with their money.
I know that sounds like heresy in the holiday season, because now is the charitable giving time, but I just think it's where it is. So let me ask you, as part of government policy, I mean, we're in this moment where our needs are pretty high, because according to Tim Scott, we are the most charitable. We give seven times more than the Europeans and twice as much as the Canadians. And as you said, and I agree with, it's because our safety net is so badly broken. What can we be doing? What should we be fighting for in the new year? What should we be committing to pushing our representatives to do in the coming year?
I think we should have less inequality. I think part of the problem is we have a tiny number of people who are doing extremely well. And part of the reason for that is they pay much lower tax rates than working people like you do. And I think we should make everyone pay the same tax rates as they make money. And I think that will help quite a bit over the long run in order to equalize things a little bit more.
So you're a flat tax guy?
No, not a flat tax, not the same rate in every dollar. I think we should have graduated rates. But I think that investors and, Wall Street investors should have the same rules as people who work for a living.
Got it.
So if your rates are, 10, 20, 30, 40, and my rates are 0, 15, and 20, that's not fair. And I think we should both have the same rates, and we should both have rates that go 10, 20, 30, 40, if that's what working people pay for a living.
There you go.
So I think that would be a step in the right direction towards equalizing things. I think we should use some of the money that's coming into our state and local and federal governments to provide a little bit more of a safety net for those people who are most in need.
I'm right there with you. Morris, as always, great talking with you. I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work there at Patriotic Millionaires, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. Look forward to seeing you on the other side in the new year.
Happy holidays to you and yours, Rick. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Morris Pearl, chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. Check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can check that out. We'll take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. You know, Morris makes an interesting point. I love when rich people go, yeah, we should pay the same tax rate that you working people pay. look, and he's not wrong. I tell the story all the time. I would love to go back to the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower's tax code. And yes, for those who don't know, the socialist part is sarcasm. Ike was a Republican. But his tax rate back then, 92% at the top end. But all the way down and all the way up. The more you made, the bigger your shoulders, the more you paid. Every $2,000 was a new tax rate all the way until you hit the 92% level, which was, I think, like $200,000 back then. Which meant if you made $2,000, you paid a certain amount. You made $4,000, you paid that first $2,000 and the second $2,000, and so on, all the way up the scale until that top rate. And we use that money to do weird things, like fund schools and infrastructure and pay for wars. We paid for wars. We didn't put all that stuff on credit cards. And we had a corporate tax rate of 56%. And somehow, miraculously, somehow the country survived. And interestingly enough is the time when most people that you ask, when was the country great? A lot of people point back to the 50s because it had a booming economy, or we think it did. And, it was that Leave It to Beaver era where one income could support a family. And one parent could stay home and raise the children. And there was a whole community feel. We were very much a we society. Now we've been told Hunger Games. One with the most toys wins. Greed is good. Hooray for me. The heck with you. Gotta get mine. And, in the job market. It's the same thing. Because we've broken down unions. We've broken down the ability for working people to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. And why? So Elon Musk can fire people at will and replace them with robots. And trust me, there's more of that coming. There's more of it coming because they need to put we working people back in our place. So while we're busy fighting each other over the urban-rural divide or over, you name the nonsense, I'm tired of it already. The more we focus on the dumb stuff, the more they rob us blind. Speaking of dumb stuff, again, I had a guy say, you Democrats shut down the Keystone Pipeline. No, in fact, it's leaking. Leaked 14,000 barrels a day until it was shut down. Not by Joe Biden, but by the Canadian company that owns it, the TC Energy Corporation. They've shut it down. And what we found out is in the last 12 years, do you know what the leakiest pipeline in the country is? The one that doesn't exist. Yes, the Keystone Pipeline has spilled the most oil in the last 12 years than any other pipeline, according to data from the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. And yes, there is a Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. There is an administration whose sole job is to make sure that we know when the pipelines leak into our water supply. I know that the Republicans and Donald Trump want to get rid of regulation and such oversight. And there's actually a move, you know, in our government to do away with the oversight and not allow them to do, their jobs. But you have, this pipeline that spilled multiple times. 26,000 barrels of crude onto our land. But hey, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We need more pipelines. That's what they tell us. Green energy's bad. It's just crazy times we live in. Just crazy, bizarre times. I'm still struggling with it. Also, good news. Good news on the Mark Meadows front. Evidently, Mark Meadows, some new texts being outed. Turns out that Meadows, these texts revealed that Meadows and Representative Ralph Norman were having a back and forth where Norman, urged Trump to declare martial law to save America. And what we're finding out is that, now there's all this stuff out there where Meadows was texting like 34 representatives during this time period on how they're going to, declare martial law, overthrow the elections, steal election, make it. But we're still focused on the Twitter files. These are actually your politicians. These are the people you vote for, not a couple of corporate executives arguing. No, but that's what we're supposed to be focusing on. These are, members of the White House cabinet. These are members of Congress. These are state level politicians. These are, the far right activists marching, the guys with the marching orders. All of this with the chief of staff. Stop and think about that for a minute. And you know what? We haven't locked them all up yet. Why? Because we're helping them rewrite the history. In fact, Donald Trump's got a new book coming out. Yes, he's going to have a new book coming out next year, evidently showcasing his prior correspondence with celebrities and international icons. Not sure how much of this is going to be, presidential stuff, but I'm sure he's going to get letters from people telling him how wonderful he is. So you get to read that. You get to read. I'm sure it's going to be a couple $100 for a crummy book with pictures of him and his orange hair. But it's going to be nice words, the best words, the very best words, all in this book. Again, here's the distraction. Here's the laser pointer for the cats to be chasing around. In this scenario, you and I are supposed to be the cats chasing the nonsense around. And you know what's weird? People are going to buy that book. People are going to make that their coffee table. In fact, I'm driving on the road today. My wife and I are going to lunch. And don't you know, someone in front of us had a Trump license plate. I had to take a picture of it. Because I'm going, nobody's going to believe me that some idiot is dumb enough to spend $100 to put Trump on their license plate. But there they were. And what's interesting is there were four other people who had done it probably before them because they had to get it with the number 5, which is weird. There's no one. And this is just how my mind works. There has never been a president. There has never been a leader. There's never been a person that I've met that I would pay to put their name on my license plate. That would never happen. In what world does someone go, no, I want to be creative. And I'm going to put someone who I don't know's name on my license plate. I'm confused. I don't understand what's going wrong with this country. Please explain it to me. I don't know how you get there, but whatever drug we need, whatever mental health group session we need, whatever self-help group, whatever group therapy session, please, you with the other four with the Trump license plates, get to it.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underlie said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
We are joined by the 57th Assembly District Representative, Lee Snodgrass. Thanks for being here.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
How do I need to adapt this based on what has changed since I first introduced it? Government does not move fast. I'm sure that's a shocker to all of you guys. Public policy doesn't change until public opinion changes.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's your name? Gina of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your name? Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mantner with your headlines. 20 communities across Wisconsin voted to approve referendums to pay for public safety during the midterms. Governor Evers is pushing for increasing state shared revenue to local governments to help pay for police, but the initiatives haven't passed the GOP-led legislature. Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Vaughn says he believes referendums are good because it opens up discussion beyond the basic level, but admits inflation is making it harder for local governments to pay their employees. Some local governments feel the need to go to referendum to pay for public safety services is a sign the state's underfunding its share of paying for such services. Voss says he's, quote, open to the idea of updating the shared revenue formula, doing something different, unquote. WPR reporting Governor Evers proposed increasing state shared revenue for local governments by $91 million to cover public safety. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Radical bastards for opposing his pipe dream.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, Joe Manchin has, for the moment, for the time being, no intention of switching parties. You never know. He can't tell what the future is going to bring. Doesn't know. He could cinema his way out of the Democratic Party and into, well, I guess the flow of cash that she's, do you see the numbers on the cash that she's been raking in? You wonder why people are a little jaundiced on politics. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on what's going on, where we are, where we're going, what's going on, especially in the state of Ohio, where, hey, they're being a little, they're doing their job, making sure that voters don't get to vote. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio Congressman Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So, your state, working diligently to make sure that people don't get to vote.
Now, in which direction?
First, the bill that is moving to make a 60% threshold to put any constitutional amendment on the ballot. The SB 202 look-alike.
There was something else that was cropped up also about the ballot boxes.
Nope, that's where I was going next. The SB 202 Georgia look-alike, that's coming through, the ALEC bill. There's a bunch of them that are making their way through. Your legislature, busy, man.
Right. The 60, you know, the threshold vote, as they call it, we, for years in Ohio, have had all types of different initiatives, and it's never been required to have any type of, you know, super majority. So I don't understand the rationale now of trying to change, how you put on the initiatives to the ballot.
Fear of the people. They're afraid of those women folk are going to go and get that abortion stuff put in your Constitution.
But, you know, it can work in other directions, too, for them. You know, things potentially that they want.
Yeah, I know, like no rights at work. I mean, but they tried that, and look, the people went and voted overwhelmingly to undo the horrible that the Ohio legislature did. So, again, I think they're afraid of the people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just don't know why they would want to, again, tinker with it, because for years and years we've had a system that works. The legislature comes back and enables legislation, obviously, once a ballot initiative has passed. And so I just don't know why they're so intent on doing this, you know, increasing threshold for the citizen-led initiatives. Again, it might be something that they might even want, but what this will do, and this is coming from the top GOP, they want to make it harder for citizens, basically, in a nutshell, to lead ballot initiatives and to enact a constitutional amendment. And again, the legislature gets a second bite at the apple when these initiatives are passed.
Yep.
But they would take it to 60% from the current 50. Again, it has been, I don't know the complete history of it, but ever since I was involved in the legislature back in 1981, it's always been a workable system at 50%.
Yeah, evidently this law has been in place since 1912. It seemed to work okay until now, because I guess people are, I guess we're more engaged in politics than we've ever been. Is that the rationale?
Well, the Secretary of State, LaRose, says that, I think in his quote, something to the effect that if you pass this, it's a win for good government because it restores the power of popular majorities, bipartisan consensus. You know, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know how it restores the power of a popular majority when our majority has always been 50 plus one vote.
Right.
That's our majority. Whether you like the initiative or you don't, that's what it's been. You know?
Yeah, going to be interesting to see how far down the tubes Ohio goes.
By the way, through the General Assembly, you can bypass an amendment that would go to the ballot by having 60% consensus in each chamber of the legislature. You can do it that way.
So you can what? You can,
well, if you want, there's two different ways to get a constitutional amendment to the ballot.
I thought it had to be 50% in the legislature. I didn't think they had a supermajority in the legislature.
Yeah, they have a supermajority, 60%. And so the one way is the constitutional amendment, which is 50. The other is the General Assembly, and that requires a supermajority in both chambers, the Ohio House and Senate. And then once you get that threshold, voters need to then approve the 60% the legislature puts on approve it by a 50% margin of vote.
Interesting.
So, you know, if there's no ballot initiative and I come up with something and I can get it through the legislature with 60% consensus, then it goes as a measure automatically without collecting signatures, and 50% of the people, if they say yes to it, it passes.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays itself out. I'm sure this will go through like a hot knife through butter. We'll see what Governor DeWine does. I'm told that he's probably going to sign it. We'll see. Also want to get your thought. We're going to be in Florida on Friday as we begin our vacation period. But it looks like federal spending is going to expire on Friday. Are we up for a shutdown over the holidays, or do you think we're going to get some short-term fix?
Well, in this issue, Rosa DeLauro, who's still the current chair of the committee for appropriations, which really is the spending committee that does the bills, she has basically made some statements that they are not preparing the consensus resolution that is just keeping the government going as it is and maybe adding something. It's not a budget. I just wanted to make that clear.
Right.
But she has said that she has not prepared a backup resolution to continue the government, whether it's a month or a week or 2 months or whatever. Now, I think that's probably on her part a smart thing to do, because she's trying to push to get something passed, that's going to at least go through the process a little bit. But I would say that they're going to have to go to some type of resolution, just a continuing, as we call it, a continuing resolution for spending. I really don't think it's going to go down to the wire. How many times have we seen this before? It gets to the drama, oh, yep, my goodness, here we go. The government's going to shut down. Not that it hasn't happened. When it does, there's usually repercussions, obviously. And I don't think this is a very good time to do it. Now, it will be short term, I'm assuming. They're not going to pass it for a whole year. Why would the Democratic side do that when they're going to lose control of the House? They'll want to at least take something maybe into 60 days worth of funding or 90 days, because the new cycle begins anyway again in March.
Right. So, but we're gonna spend the next 2 years fighting over this. This is now going to be a thing, I believe.
Of course. Well, there's obviously the budget process, which nobody's done for 14 years because they do continuing resolutions. They don't do the 13 appropriation bills like they used to, one by one, amendment by amendment, line by line, in the House and then over to the Senate. They don't do that. They'll do pieces of them. Then they get down to the continuing resolution, and a little bit of spending's added in domestic, and a little bit of spending's added in defense, and both sides, usually capitulate to each other, and then boom, they'll pass something. But I don't think they're going to take it all the way through the next budget cycle. They'll just take it into, I don't know, maybe let's say January and February.
Also, want to get your thoughts on evidently some business groups are pushing hard on a bipartisan immigration bill. They want it done by the end of the year, but the claim is the chief negotiator has been Kristen Sinema. Not sure how that's going to work, on the Democratic side, because business interests are crying because they can't get people to come work in the low wage jobs. So they want immigration. They want people to come in.
Well, I would say that that this immigration bill is DOA, as they say in political terms. It's dead on arrival. They're trying to get as much done as possible during the lame duck session, and people put forth these ideas. They might take it into next year. There was actually some thoughts of trying to get this done towards the end, and there were pieces, obviously, from Senator Sinema's proposal, and then also Tom Tillis, Republican from North Carolina. He was the bipartisan part of this. It's example kind of, I guess you'd say, of the bipartisan effort that the Senate often tries to say they'll want to do these days. But if you look at it, it's already collapsing. it would, the best part of that proposal, by the way, would be for DACA, for the Dreamers,
right.
Which is, to me, that's an easy sell. I don't know why any of the Republicans ever fought that anyway, so that's okay. But it would come at a cost because there'd be additional border security. I think it's $25 billion in border security. And that would, from the Democratic side, I think, you know, they've tried to secure the border as a, what, sort of a gimme for Republicans to join the effort. But I don't know. I think that it's a changing, it's like the little things you hit at the billiard.
The whack-a-mole.
Yeah, that's it. It's a whack-a-mole because it's a moving target. So yeah. I think it collapses. Business concerns tried before. There actually was a proposal at one time when I was there, Rick, which was by President Bush, and you could hear people in the privacy of the room in the caucus Republican yelling, amnesty, amnesty, what's he doing, you know? So it didn't get anywhere. And that had the business community backing, too.
They know that. Look, they want cheap labor, man. They want exploitable labor. You know where their minds are at.
Right.
It is what it is. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I got to get your thought on the big news today that evidently they've got the Lockerbie bomber in custody and heading back to the U.S. I guess got out of you know, captivity. What, in somewhere in Libya, I guess. And you had some militia group snatch him up. I'm sure we paid for that. I'm curious your thoughts.
Actually, it's funny you mention that because this morning when I was doing the Tennessee radio, it was in the story that the bomber, which has, you know, been since 1988 running around, was, quote, kidnapped in Tripoli, in the major capital of Tripoli of Libya. And he had been kidnapped by, quote, armed men on November the 16th. So, I mean, this is great. They got the guy. He's coming here to the United States, and he will be the only one tried here because the other two were tried in the Netherlands in a special designed court system over there. So this is the one that will be tried here. But I thought this morning when I was asked, you know, how did we get him, I said, well, either special forces or we will find out that someone else, quote, kidnapped him. But we probably did pay for that to happen.
I'm sure we did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Is there anything wrong with that?
I don't think so, personally.
I mean, you know, this is 1988. I remember this pretty vividly because there were a lot of Americans on that flight because it was a flight coming to the U.S. from London.
Right, right.
Oh, well, there's something like 270 people killed, 259 on the plane, 11 people on the ground as the plane was crashing down on people.
Right.
So
and
should
then,
we?
And there were American deaths.
Should we try him here? Should he be tried here, or should there be an international court? I know there's some calls that the UN get involved. I know that even one of the parents of one of the people killed said the U.S. shouldn't be trying them, or people or Scotland shouldn't be trying them. Any thoughts on that?
I think he should be tried if he was one of the perpetrators of the bombing. And if they prove that, if he has, you know, his day in court, I think he should be tried. It's actually a better system than the alternative, which is for him to be assassinated by someone, you know, without the due process. But I don't know. I don't see anything wrong with whether it was in the Netherlands, which is, again, where the other two were taken. The precedent on it was that the other two were taken to that court. But if they've got him and bring him back here, then I think it's okay if they try him.
Now, what do you think of the idea that it has to be in Scotland? Because it I guess it happened there.
Well, on that one, that is interesting because technically it would be in the jurisdiction, I would assume, of Scotland. If it happened here in the United States, I guess the question we would ask legally is, would we want someone, if the incident had happened in the United States, would we want them taken to another country and put on trial? We would probably say we want it to happen here.
Yeah, and I've seen a couple of stories. You know, one of them says no death penalty. I've seen one that said that no death penalty.
In the case?
Yeah, I mean, is it possible he could be put to death for this?
Well, I don't. Well, actually, not. I don't think it would fall under a federal death penalty. Correct?
Yeah. I mean, he did murder 270 people.
Right. Right.
I mean, I'm not a death penalty guy, but I can see this being one of those cases where I'd go, yeah, I can see it.
Uh-huh, right. I mean, I have no, again, if you look at the jurisdiction of where it happened, and it happened in Scotland, maybe he should be taken there, but I personally don't see anything wrong, since there were Americans involved, to bring him back here and put him up for trial.
Yeah. Finally, I want to get your thoughts on the Mark Meadows. Evidently, there have been some more texts out there. And again, what is it with these people and text messages? Didn't they have my grandfather as an advisor? You never write anything down, stupid. But evidently, they've got texts of Meadows texting members of Congress, members of the of right wing militia groups, of state legislators. He's texting everybody. Won't shut up.
Well, there was the text of the martial law.
Yeah.
So you've got a United States congressman. He's Republican, and he wanted Trump to invoke martial law to stay in office.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be different if the text would say, Trump needs to pursue this through the court system. The election was stolen, and all that malarkey. But when you get somebody who says, I think we need to have martial law. Yeah, we can just do that way. We can just do what we want to do. Screw the court. We'll just have martial law because it's our opinion that we've got an unfair election.
So why are these people still walking around in Germany? Didn't they just have an attempt to overthrow something over there and they rounded all those people up immediately? Why are these people still walking around rewriting history?
I mean, to me, if you want to talk about sedition of the government to actually say out of the clear blue that the president ought to have martial law so we can over